I would like to introduce our first speaker, Jacqueline McGowan-Jones. Jacqueline began her appointment as WA's Commissioner for Children and Young People in January 2022. She is passionate about the future for our children and young people and believes the role of Commissioner brings high expectations from our youth people so they have a strong voice to advocate their views across government. Jacqueline is committed to strengthening the system that improves the opportunities available to all children and young people. Her experience and heritage, cultural connections to Arenda and Warramungu country in the Northern Territory has given her a strong focus on the interests and needs of Aboriginal children and young people, as well as those from vulnerable backgrounds and disadvantaged backgrounds. She believes that all young people have a right to be heard, and she strives to bring a new level of understanding and engagement to issues impacting our children and young people.
Thanks, Josh, and it's a pleasure to meet you. I feel so unaccomplished in the room today with Indigo, Bella and Josh, I've got to say. Wurra, Aranda Arala. I'm an Aranda woman from the Northern Territory, Aranda Warramungu. Aranda is Alice Springs. Warramungu is Tennant Creek, the thriving metropolis that many of you may have really wanted to go to forever. I'd encourage you to visit. I firstly want to acknowledge that we're meeting on the lands of the Whadjuk peoples of the Noongar Nation and how important it is for me to acknowledge our continuing connection for over 60,000 years as Aboriginal peoples with land, family, community, culture and language. I'm blessed to be on Noongar country and pay my respects to not only our elders, past and present, but our ancestors, and for those amazing young people who are not our leaders of tomorrow. They are, in fact, our leaders today, right now. And they keep me safe, and it's great. Glenda, I know, thanks for saying you love me, even though you want to replace me. No, that's not true. My office and a number of other people in community have advocated for a long time for WA to have a Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People. Whilst we don't have one, and when my announcement in this role came, the media announcement led with my Aboriginality, so I'm pretty sure it's not yet coming. But the Act actually says I must pay special attention to vulnerable children and young people and to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and young people. And to be blunt, if you do it right for our kids, then it's right for all kids. Because we are so often at the wrong end of the scale. So I noticed that Anne has gone, but Anne and I have been... I asked her if she was stalking me. We've been at a number of events recently together and she's amazing and I thank her for being here today. I also believe we have the Honourable A.O. Truott MLC, who is on the Joint Standing Committee for the Commissioner for Children and Young People, the Honourable Kate Doust, the Honourable Sandra Carr, and, of course, one of our own ambassadors for the Office of Children and Young People, the Honourable Judge Dennis Reynolds, former president of the Children's Court and very strong advocate about needing to do things differently. I also want to thank Tony Petropiccolo and Kate for asking me to come along and speak this morning. And most importantly, I want to thank the Honourable Chris Dawson for allowing us to have this event here. And not only that, he's also hosting a group of young people from my two advisory committees in a few weeks. And it's great to see you both again today. So thank you very much for having us. Josh already said my name. I'm Jacqueline McGowan-Jones. I'm the Commissioner for Children and Young People in WA. And it's my dream job, by the way. I had gone home to the Northern Territory. I was to stay in the Northern Territory. That's what I was going to do. I was going to be home on country. I was going to be with family. I was going to, what do they call it, transition to retirement. Well, bad luck, you got stuck with me because this job was advertised and it is absolutely my dream job. I could tell you about all the things I'm meant to do. There's functions beyond belief in Section 19 of our Act. But really my job is to advocate on behalf of children and young people, monitor the laws, policies, practices, and other things that government and other organisations do that affect and impact children and young people, promote and value the voice of children and young people, and they are the best arbiters of what they need, and we should listen to them more. And that means the best, very best part of my job, I have to go out and talk to children and young people, and I get paid for it. So it's a delight for me. And when I talk about consulting with children and young people, that's how I know Bella, a wonderful voice, and that's what I mean by listening to our children and young people. They know what's needed. We also do research and inquire on behalf of children and young people about their wellbeing. I think it was Bella's group, who are a youth advisory council, where I asked them if they, before each council meeting, review all of the papers for the council. This council may never ask me back, by the way. And they said, oh, well, we did when it was the youth precinct. And I said, but everything a local government does impacts children and young people. Don't you think you should be asked to look at all the papers that go to council? I forgot to ask you how that went, Bella. Are you now looking at all papers that go to council? Well done. So, child poverty is a significant, persistent and malignant issue that affects our children and young people. Since my office started 15 years ago on the 10th of December, we've been building a fairly compelling picture of what child vulnerability looks like and the commonalities that contribute to poor outcomes for children and young people. I'm not going to go over what the amazing speakers have said prior to me, except to remind you that poverty is not just about money, and that it is about the pervasive nature of poverty on the life of a child. While there isn't an agreed definition on a measure of poverty in Australia, which is something we desperately need to have, we are coming to understand that where kids are concerned, an appropriate definition must capture different aspects of poverty. And this includes material basics, health, housing, education, all of those things. Many people have told their personal story of poverty this morning. I grew up in a state government house in a fairly shocking area in Victoria. It was known as being a very bad state government estate housing estate. I'm the eldest of a large number of children. My father spent most of my life in custody, and he passed away in custody. And my mother raised 10 children as a single mum. When she first tried to get supporting parents' benefit, it was called the widow's pension then, she was told she couldn't get it because she left her husband. He was in jail. But she wasn't allowed to have income support because she'd left her husband. If people in my life had said, she's Aboriginal, her father's in jail, they've got no money, they're really poor, they live in state housing, she'll never amount to anything, I wouldn't be here talking to you today. We had a society then that was more concerned about how do we wrap around each other and how do we support children. I have to say, every person in our street was a disciplinarian, not always to my advantage, I might say. And every parent knew who the kids were and where they belonged and how to help them. And none of us had any money. We were all in a housing commission estate. And I can remember eating banana sandwiches, I reckon, every day for the school holidays at the people next door's house because they looked after us while my mum worked. My mum worked from 6 a.m. until 6 p.m. in Dunlop Rubber Factory making fan belts for motor cars. And of a night she went and waitressed in a Chinese restaurant. But if people judged me on the circumstances I was born into, I wouldn't be where I am today. And what we cannot continue to do is blame a child for the circumstance in which it is born. It is unfathomable to me that as a society we are not appalled, standing in the streets, raising our voices on a daily basis about the need for society to take care of our children and young people. To blame our children for being neurodivergent, to blame our children and young people for having parents in disadvantage is just not acceptable. I've got a 3-minute warning and I haven't... My staff would say she's off script again. All right. I am off script again. I'll quickly read this to make sure I haven't forgotten anything. When children cannot participate fully at school, I couldn't go on school camps, and I have to say thank God for the Salvation Army, who gave us Christmas presents and who sometimes enabled us to participate in school activities. When children can't participate fully in the life of the school, but more importantly can't even participate in their class because they don't have the notebooks or the textbooks or the equipment, that is unacceptable. From our Speaking Out survey in 2021, 16,532 children and young people in years 4 to 12 at high school, 4 in primary school, 12 in high school, we know the disparities between groups that draw a link between material deprivation and wellbeing. Now, this is one of the most comprehensive surveys ever, and it's also a representative survey, so we can extrapolate this data. Almost 1 in 10 students in year 4 to 12 said only sometimes or never was there enough food for them to eat. 1 in 12. That doubles for Aboriginal children and young people. It's 1 in 5. It also shows that children who go hungry are 2 times more likely to not like school and 3 times more likely to have poor health and 4 times more likely to have low life satisfaction. Having your own laptop or tablet or some sort of electronic device, which didn't exist when I was at school, are actually critical now for students not only to participate in the classroom but to do homework. More than 1 in 10 high school students across WA do not have their own device. For Aboriginal students, 1/4 of them only have access to those items. Internet access is also essential. We know that it is more difficult for Aboriginal children and young people and those kids living in more remote areas. But Aboriginal students in remote areas are still significantly less likely than non-Aboriginal students in those same areas to have access to the internet. We all know that there's a lot more to child poverty in this state. It is about reducing and removing poverty and the fundamental right, as per Article 27, for kids to grow up happy, healthy, learning and safe. I'm finished now, apparently, but I'll just be a couple more seconds. There is a moral and ethical dimension to this debate that cannot be ignored any longer. Today we're speaking to the converted, and we need to be able to speak to those who damn well need converting and fast. So I will leave it there for now. I thank you all for listening and I can't wait to hear the other speakers.